From Williamsport to Warren, Uniontown to Harrisburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Governor Josh Shapiro recently spoke to the Pennsylvania Press Club, touting his achievements and blaming his failures on a divided legislature. David Taylor is joined by Rebecca Euler and Stephen Bloom for a Capitol Watch analysis. And Democrats have been winning statewide elections, but their voter registration edge over the GOP has been steadily narrowing. Is Pennsylvania turning purple? I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Former Delaware County District Attorney Kat Copeland has announced her candidacy for Pennsylvania Attorney General. Her career also includes a recent stint in the U.S. Attorney's Office. Copeland will vie with York County District Attorney David Sunday for the GOP nod. Sunday was endorsed last week by the Republican Attorneys General Association, and the state Republican Party will consider its endorsement for the position after the first of the year. A number of Democrats also have entered the fray, seeking what will be an open seat, as current Attorney General Michelle Henry is serving by appointment and not seeking election to the post. Pennsylvania lawmakers are getting an early Christmas present as base salaries for members of the State House and State Senate will increase to $106,000 per year. That makes Pennsylvania, again, the third highest paid legislature in the nation after California and New York. A 1995 law provides for annual cost of living increases to lawmakers' salaries. Despite the hefty pay increase, the Democrat-controlled House is on track to set a record for being in session the fewest number of days this year, as the chamber has stood in recess for lengthy periods of time when the chamber was tied 101-101 due to vacant seats. That situation will occur again in a couple of weeks as a Bucks County state representative will resign to become a magisterial district judge, depriving Democrats of their current one-seat majority. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Governor Josh Shapiro recently spoke at a Pennsylvania Press Club luncheon, touting his ability to get stuff done. And he blames the divided state legislature for the stuff he hasn't been able to get done. Our Capitol Watch crew is here to talk about it. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capitol Watch All-Stars from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO, Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, great to be with you.
Great to be here too, Dave. Thanks.
And also with us, Steve Bloom, Vice President of Pennsylvania's free market think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, great to see you.
It's a pleasure to be here, David. Thank
well,
you.
Well, we got a lot to talk about. So His Excellency the Governor presented himself at the Pennsylvania Press Club the other day and expounded on his record and also actually was forced to take a couple of questions. And so that whole thing was entertaining. And actually, Steve, you were sitting right next to me, so I'll let you bat lead off here. What'd you think about his performance?
Well, it's interesting, David, because Governor Shapiro spoke a lot about what he calls getting stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
He even had a big poster that was getting stuff done.
Multiple posters.
Several. Mm-hmm. And the initials GSD. Just mm-hmm. kept talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's clearly focused on presenting the idea that, boy, he's doing a lot. That he's really made a difference and got a lot done as governor. And on the lists he had these poster boards with bullet point items of things he had gotten done. I think the first thing that struck me and probably anyone who's paying attention to Pennsylvania is that the vast majority of those bullet points, the things he had listed on those posters that he was touting, were the type of things that the governor can do by executive action. He's not really been able to get things done that a governor traditionally gets done working with the legislature to pass laws and or defeat proposed passage of laws. Instead, he's playing the small ball inside game, doing things he can do with his pen, kind of reminiscent of President Obama. You know, I have a pen and a phone.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
that sort of leadership by executive fiat rather than by the legislative process that he seems to be specializing in. And it's small stuff. I mean, there's things that he's touted are as being so important. For example, fixing I-95 in a record amount of time when there was a fire that caused structural damage. Those are things that are important locally, but they're not proof that a person can really govern a big state with a complex political environment and different regional issues that all need to be balanced. He's playing small ball instead of doing big picture things.
And also, it seems like he wants to dine out on that I-95 thing over and over. It's like that was actually at the start of the year, which is almost over now. And it was impressive at the time, but a lot of things have happened since then.
Yeah, that's originally exactly right. The I-95 issue was a big one, and it was a great victory in leadership. I think we can admit that and say that for sure.
We said it at the time.
It was
for sure.
Great, sure. But it's like Steve said, all of the things that could have been that were accomplished, especially on that I-95 project, were done with executive authority, and especially on I-95 where there was an emergency declaration in place, where he didn't have to comply with all of the sometimes excruciating regulatory requirements, which drag out projects like that. So he was able really to solve that issue with a lot of, expediency that normally wouldn't happen in an event like that.
Including help of that type from the feds.
Exactly. Yeah. And funding and lots of funding. Right. So Steve's exactly right. All of the sort of victories, the successes that he ticked off, the vast majority of them were regulatory issues and even some regulatory or executive actions, and even some that some would argue probably shouldn't be executive actions, like automatic voter registration, which he, authorized PennDOT and the Department of State to do, which some would argue should have been a legislative action. But that was one that he, I think, touted as a victory and was an executive action.
It just seemed there were some things that sort of rang false to me. And one of them, he was questioned about the Lifeline scholarships that he had said he was for, that he agreed to in the budget negotiations, and then that he backstabbed the Republicans in the Senate because he couldn't persuade the House to go along with the scholarship plan. And when he was asked about that the governor said, oh, well, I'm still for it. And there are other things that I'm for, too, like raising the minimum wage and having a retroactive window for lawsuits regarding sexual abuse and whatnot. And it just reminded me of that warning about the going to a Middle Eastern bazaar, how many times you'll have to buy the same rug until you can actually take it home. That it seems as though, there was a deal, they went back on that deal, and that now that they're going to use that same lure to try to get additional concessions. And I don't think that's going to fly.
With Lifeline scholarships in particular, sometimes called PASS scholarships, that is it's a school choice initiative. It's one that the Commonwealth Foundation has been deeply involved in and we continue to advocate for. Governor Shapiro had talked about it on the campaign trail. He said it was something he would support, that he does support school choice expansion. He said that, and yet he line item vetoed
right.
that piece of the budget bill when it was passed so that it didn't actually go into effect. He was asked about it, and I'm glad he was. And his response, he categorized it as unfinished business, which I thought was somewhat encouraging. He wasn't saying it's off the table, it's done with, it's not ever going to get done. He said it's unfinished business. Then, as you indicated, he started to list a litany of other initiatives that he considered to be unfinished business, many of which were really contrary to the policies that certainly the Commonwealth Foundation or the Pennsylvania Manufacturers or the Trucking Association would support. So he's kind of linking this idea of expanding school choice to a litany of left-leaning initiatives that wouldn't be productive for Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Are the legislators of the party opposite going to be willing to be played for chumps? I really doubt it.
And I noticed that he does have sort of a short list of things that he'd like to accomplish. I think he said something along the lines of that he has some faith that there are big things to come in 2024, and went down a list of some things that he'd like to accomplish. But I noticed that those things would require legislation for the most part. He talked about minimum wage, addressing gun violence in the mm-hmm. state, repealing the statute of limitations for victims of childhood sexual assault, which we know has been an issue. The legislature's been debating for a while. And the school funding formula. Those are big issues that, in addition to the Lifeline scholarships, that we know will require legislation. So I guess it comes back to, is he going to be able to lead and actually build legislative support for his initiatives along those lines?
Right.
And is he willing to negotiate? And that's what a governor does.
Yeah.
So the question is, will he be able to do that going forward? Because this year has not really been successful in that regard.
You can't say that it was successful. It's been further complicated by the dysfunction in the House with the very close balance of power, 102-101 in the 203-seat chamber, and a series of special elections that have left things deadlocked. And during that time, that the Democrats won't, come back into session, and therefore the House is essentially, on lockdown.
And when it's 101-101 because of a resignation of a sitting member, what we've seen so far is the House just goes on recess.
Correct.
And they are gone during the time it takes to replace that member because they're afraid of what might happen if it's 101-101.
And that's what's so frustrating. That's kind of what I'm talking about when I say that's the function of a governor. That's what a governor is there for, to lead, to actually build a consensus, and to, bring everyone to the table and try to come up with a path forward.
And to use the bully pulpit.
Exactly.
Like, that's what the governor has. The thing that the governor has that most legislative leaders do not have is the ability to go out and speak to the press and have his statements be heard by the whole state. Use that bully pulpit. Effective governors do that. They use their governmental authority as well, the gubernatorial authority, but the bully pulpit is the real weapon they have.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation. Well, there was another sort of too clever by half sort of thing that the governor did. He was asked about the regional greenhouse gas initiative, talking about the ruling by the Commonwealth Court that the actions of Governor Wolf were unconstitutional, that the REGI tax is in fact a tax and not a fee and therefore unconstitutional. The question to the governor was, will you appeal that to the Supreme Court? And he said, well, there'll be news on that in the coming days. Well, right before Thanksgiving, right before everybody leaves on vacation, it is announced that he will in fact appeal to the Supreme Court to ask them to keep in place the REGI scheme. And this is just disappointing doesn't begin to describe, because, when he was running as a candidate for governor, he was very dubious about REGI. He romanced the industrial trade unions whose members will lose their jobs under REGI. He earned the endorsement of those industrial unions. He put together a working group, so on and so forth. And now when he actually finally has to choose sides, he chooses the radical Greens against the hard hat working people who will lose their jobs when our power plants go down.
And it's not just going to be the fact that we're going to lose jobs. We're talking about consumers across Pennsylvania are going to be paying about 40% more in electricity bills.
Oh, yeah.
If REGI is enacted due to Supreme Court of Pennsylvania action as that appeal gets filed. It's a big deal across the spectrum economically. It doesn't just impact those in the energy industry.
Oh, no.
It's consumers across the state.
And
obviously,
exactly
we
right.
care a lot about those energy yes. jobs, but we care about consumers across the state.
And manufacturers consume enormous amounts of energy that higher energy prices drive inflation because it renders the cost of everything more expensive. And there's a layering effect that when things get more expensive at each level, it just keeps pancaking. And that this is how we find ourselves with many folks who've been living paycheck to paycheck being unable to pay all the bills at the end of the month.
And if you read the press statement that is associated with the governor's announcement of his decision to appeal Reggie, it's all about he has to do it because he has to protect future governors so that they have the power to take executive action.
I believe the president refers to that as malarkey.
Malarkey. And we just went through the whole cycle with Governor Wolf, how he was abusing his legislative powers, and we had constitutional amendments pass and become part of our Constitution to rein in gubernatorial powers so that we cannot have that scenario again that we had with Governor Wolf. And now here Josh Shapiro is appealing so that he can protect the authority of the executive to do things the legislature doesn't want him to do that they have voted against as a body.
Yeah, the letter of the law is clear. The Commonwealth Court decision, in my view, is absolutely unassailable because the Reggie scheme with, you know, buying credits at the auction or whatever that it brings in to the Clean Air Fund, the state, you know, agency, it brings in hundreds of millions of dollars beyond the cost of administering the program. And the law says, look, you, the executive, can impose a fee to cover the cost of administering a program. But when the receipts go beyond what it takes just to pay for that program, it becomes a tax. And that the taxing authority under the Constitution lies exclusively with the legislative branch. Like, this is the separation of powers. Like, this goes back to the, you know, the Magna Carta. You can't do this. And yet this is what the governor is going to press. And while this remains in dispute, no energy investment is going to come into Pennsylvania. Like, nobody is going to risk investing capital in a place where, you know, where the outcomes are uncertain, where you can't calculate exactly what you'll pay. And so, again, this is a great way to drive investment to Ohio and West Virginia.
I think one of the most frustrating things to me about this appeal is that in the statement, the governor actually sort of threw it in the lap of the legislature. And he said, you know, I'm appealing this ruling, and that if the legislature sort of has a better idea, they can come back and we can talk about it. So, you know, that was in effect what he said in the statement. But that comes back to my leadership, you know, statement earlier, is it's up to the governor to make a case. And if he really were a strong leader and felt strongly about, you know, working out a different program than what Reggie is providing, then he would have chosen not to appeal. He would have gone to the legislative leaders and said, what can we do? If we're not going to do this, what can we do? But instead, he's sticking with the Reggie and just throwing it in the laps of the legislators and made a statement along the lines of, you know, if they want to take their ball and go home, then, you know, we're
I know what you are, but what am I?
Right. So it's just, you know, just sort of.
Well, and he also, and this is, and again, the not to be too much of a stickler about it, but at the press club, that Governor Shapiro said that his working group agreed that having a carbon tax scheme would be a good thing. The working group did not conclude that at all. The working group said for Pennsylvania to be involved in any kind of carbon tax scheme, it would require the participation of all of the states in the PJM interconnection service zone, that all of the states where energy is being put into the grid, that they would all need to be under the same rules. That is a very different thing than what the governor said in his public statement. And again, that's just it's misleading and it's not true.
It seems that Governor Shapiro doesn't like to be. He likes to characterize things the way he wants them to be.
Yes.
He does not seem to be willing, at least in this case and a couple other examples we've seen, to accept responsibility for things that would be perceived in any negative light.
Yeah.
Interesting, at that press club event, one of the questions that he was asked was when he became aware of harassment allegations against a former legislative affairs secretary that became a scandal that came to the public eye. He ducked that question and he said, I can't speak to any particular case, and just kind of tried to move on almost as if he was questioning the motives of whoever asked him that question, rather than just answering the question. And we've seen that pattern when it came to transparency. The same thing. He was challenged on information he makes public about his schedule and other things that normally governors do, so folks mm-hmm. can keep an eye on what's happening in the governor's administration. And he says, "I would just fundamentally reject the premise of the question."
Like, but it's a fact. Governor Wolf posted his public schedule online,
right. and
the Governor Shapiro
has
stopped doing that.
He's not, and that isn't an answer to the question. Like, someone asked him the question. He said, "I would fundamentally reject the premise of the question."
Yeah. So this is, again, it's kind of a through the looking glass kind of experience. But again, we work in the political world, and we know that you know, things come with spin, and it's rare that you know get an answer straight up. But this was, I thought, a particularly impressive performance in, I don't know what you'd call it, misdirection, perhaps. But anyway, this is, like I said, this is the world in which we work, and so we do the best that we can to tell it straight to you listeners. Thank you for being with us. We're running down to the end of our time here. Steve, where can folks go to learn more about you and your work and what's going on with Commonwealth?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org on the internet.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about you and your work and what's going on in the world of trucking?
They can find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at pmta.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on Sunday mornings on the Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. So from Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. At a glance, it would appear Pennsylvania Democrats are poised for a big year in 2024. After posting a landslide win in the 2020 gubernatorial election and flipping a U.S. Senate seat long held by Republicans, and then sweeping all four of this year's statewide judicial races, the party is riding high. Yet a New York Times Siena College poll conducted in late October found former President Donald Trump leading President Joe Biden in a hypothetical matchup, 48% to 44%. Trump likewise posted significant leads in five of six battleground states, trailing only in Wisconsin. Given the Democrats' recent string of electoral victories in Penn's Woods, the Trump lead in the polls seems to be an outlier. But is it? The bottom line is that when you have seen one election, you have seen one election. Each election year has a Rubik's Cube of factors, with even the electorate itself comprised differently. At this early stage in the 2024 election cycle, two factors appear to be buoying Republicans: pervasive voter dissatisfaction with the status quo, especially the economy, and a rapidly dwindling statewide Democratic voter registration edge. In the November 2020 general election, in which President Biden carried the state by 81,660 votes, Democrats held a 685,818 voter lead in registration. By the November 2022 general election, that lead had fallen to 549,568. The Democrat slide continued in 2023 as the voter registration margin narrowed to 446,704 voters. Thus, entering 2024, the Democrat voter registration edge has declined by 239,114 voters, far larger than the Biden 2020 victory margin. Governor Josh Shapiro has continued Democrat efforts to tinker in the electoral process, bypassing the legislature to implement by executive fiat an automatic voter registration component to the obtaining of driver's licenses. Even that move failed to change the trajectory of voter registration in the state. A series of recent polls has revealed a grouchy electorate. This is the season of voter discontent. The New York Times Siena poll found 68% of Pennsylvania voters saying the nation is headed in the wrong direction. A September poll by the Commonwealth Foundation found 72% of Pennsylvanians think the country has fundamentally gotten off on the wrong track. An October poll conducted by Franklin and Marshall College found 50% of respondents are economically worse off than they were a year ago, and 35% expect to be worse off a year from now. 55% in that poll said the state is off on the wrong track, citing concerns over high inflation and the economy. The fall 2023 Keystone Business Climate Survey conducted by the Lincoln Institute found the owners and top-line executives of Pennsylvania businesses to be in a similarly sullen mood. 45% said business conditions in Pennsylvania have gotten worse over the past 6 months. Just 16% thought conditions had improved. Another 36% reported that business conditions had remained about the same. Keep in mind, though, past polls also found business conditions had worsened, so about the same means not good. The depth of dissatisfaction among the business leaders was reflected in the job approval ratings, where all major elected officials, including President Biden, U.S. Senators Robert P. Casey Jr., and John Fetterman, were viewed negatively and by a substantial margin. Only Governor Josh Shapiro managed to post a positive job approval rating. Even institutions, including both houses of Congress and the state legislature, along with federal and state Supreme Courts, earned strongly negative job performance numbers. An additional factor that contributed to the Democratic sweep of statewide judicial offices this year is the issue of abortion. For decades, Democrats demagogued Social Security, scaring senior citizens into thinking Republicans were going to take away their benefits. Think the ad depicting former U.S. House Speaker Paul Ryan pushing grandma's wheelchair off a cliff. Since the U.S. Supreme Court's Dobbs decision returning the issue of abortion to the states, Democrats have distorted the abortion issue to their electoral advantage. In 2023, that issue dominated the statewide campaign. But in 2024, personalities will take center stage, and there is no bigger personality than Donald Trump. If Trump and Biden are their respective party nominees, the personality comparison will play largely to the Republicans' advantage, particularly if Biden's obvious decline in mental and physical ability continues to manifest itself. How that will impact down-ballot races for U.S. Senate and Congress remains to be seen. And so, as the 2024 election cycle officially gets underway, the Rubik's Cube will spin once again. The only certainty is that it's going to be interesting. Very interesting. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 28 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WPXZ-FM and WKQL-FM in Punxsutawney, along with WIYQ-AM and FM in Saxonburg, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.